North Custer Road, and it was like a two-family house. My grandparents lived in one side of the house, and my parents and I lived in the other. And, of course, it was a farmhouse because my family were farmers.
You said it was a farmhouse. Was it? Or what other?
Well, it had at one time been a, they said, it had been a stopover place for these travelers who went from maybe Detroit to Chicago and places like that, especially from Detroit to Toledo. There was no plumbing, there was no running water. We had an outhouse behind our house. It was a brick outhouse, which was not usual in those days because most of them were just plain wood. And so we had no running water, but we had a cistern on the back porch, and they managed to put a pump from the cistern into a little sink in the a little kind of a, I don't know what you call it, a pantry type thing, so that my mother and my grandmother could pump water from the cistern into that to do dishes and to put on the stove to heat for coffee and tea and things of that sort. It was kind of cold going out to the outhouse in the winter time, but that didn't make any difference because there wasn't any other way to have a bathroom with no running water.
Okay. You mentioned about having a farm, being on a farm. What kind of animals and what kind of crops did you have?
It was a general farm. We had all kinds of crops and all kinds of animals. We had a large herd of cattle. We had horses because, of course, the horses were the work animals. Didn't have any tractors or anything, so the horses had to do the plowing and the planting and the whole bit. The cows, it was a pretty good-sized herd of cattle, and they had to be milked every day, and they were all milked by hand. We did have some sheep at one time, but they didn't seem to work very well because the sheep ate all the grazing green and stuff, grass, and the cows couldn't get enough to eat. So that ended that. We never had any goats, although our neighbors had goats and kept sending their goats to us, but we didn't have them. Of course, we had all kinds of pet animals. We had dogs, we had cats, we had geese, we had chickens. I remember one chicken was a rooster that followed my mother and me around. And whenever one of us would go outside, the rooster would come and follow us. But when my father went outside, the rooster would flap its wings and start going cock-a-doodle-doo and try to really dig into the to my dad's feet, and he didn't like that very well.
What about the crops and stuff that you had?
Well, the crops, we grew everything that the animals needed to eat. We had wheat and oats and corn, alfalfa, and of course that meant taking it all out of the field, so there was always threshing time in the fall when all the farmers on the road would get together and go from house to house and do the threshing of the oats and the wheat. And then the hay, each farmer kind of did his own work with that. But we always had hired men on the farm too. And by the way, they were really highly paid. As I remember it, they got their meals and they got $1 a day, $30 a month, and that was it.
That's quite a bit of money for that time, wasn't it?
Well, not really. If the crops were good and the beef sold, why, everything was fine. But if they took any days off, they didn't get paid for the days off either, so.
Yeah.
It wasn't $30 a month, it was a dollar a day, period.
All right. How big was the farm? How many acres did you guys have?
As I remembered, I think we had 120. But a lot of it was what they call flats, which was close to the river, And that was the grazing land for all the animals. In the summertime, of course, they'd be turned out of the barns and put down in the grazing land so that, and that was close to the river.
You were alive during Prohibition. You were born 23, so you're really young, but do you remember anything about that?
All I remember is what I either read in the paper or what my family told me. And apparently, there might have been prohibition whereby there were no beer saloons and things of that sort around, but there were a lot of speakeasies, so if anybody wanted a drink, all they had to do was know the password at the speakeasy door. They'd go knock on the door and they'd be let in. And it wasn't very well policed. The police didn't seem to care what was going on in the speakeasies. There were an awful lot. I remember one thing that happened during Prohibition, and I don't remember seeing it happen, but I remember my mother telling about it. She was out in the garden and she was pulling weeds or something, and this big car came up. Well, you didn't see very many cars in those days, and it was some, and I can't remember what the guy's name was, but he was some racketeer and he was involved in Prohibition, and my mother was scared out of her wits.
Do you remember any specific places that are like still standing now that were speakeasies at one time or anything like that?
Well, there's some in Mabee, Michigan. There are a couple of buildings over there that are still standing, but how involved they were, I couldn't tell you. But that I was told that they were involved, and the one that was involved in being a speakeasy in Dundee burned down not very many years ago.
That's interesting. Do you remember when the stock market crashed?
I remember reading about it. I was just 6 years old, and I remember the newspapers coming out, and the thing I remember the most is a picture on the front page of the newspaper, which I thought was kind of bad taste. A guy jumping out of a window in a hotel in New York.
Huh.
And it was because he'd lost all of his money and stocks and so on and so forth, so
yeah,
he was killing himself. But as far as the stock market collapse, it didn't mean a whole lot to me. We never had any money anyway, so it didn't make any difference. We didn't lose anything.
So gonna ask how the depression was for you, but you said it didn't affect you that much.
Well, yeah, it did. The depression was hurting. It was different than the stock market. The stock market exchange itself started the depression, but we were already in a depression as far as living was concerned. You didn't have enough money to buy all the clothes you wanted. It was hard to buy food. So that you grew a lot of things in the garden that people don't grow today because that was the only way you could get them. And as far as clothes were concerned, I don't remember ever having anything new. It was always my cousin's old clothes, and then my mother would cut them down to my size. And the first new winter coat I ever had, I was a freshman in high school.
Huh.
All the other clothes that I had were hand-me-downs, and I had lots of them.
Where did you go to grade school at?
It was a little one-room school about a mile and a half, 2 miles from the house across the railroad track. It was Raisinville District number 10. Do you want me to elaborate on what happened there?
If you want to.
I started school with four other girls. There was Gloria, Geraldine, Gretchen, Evelyn, and me. And we started to school together. And Geraldine and I never left school at 2:30 when the younger kids could leave because we didn't walk home by ourselves. Our parents wouldn't let us. So by staying at school, we absorbed a lot of the things from the fourth and fifth grades, and so when it came time for us to go into the third grade, the teachers skipped our third grade, so we went from the second grade to the fourth grade.
Awesome.
Well, then this same teacher was there for several more years, couple, three, and Geraldine and I stayed together, and then Geraldine, her family decided that she and all of her brothers and sisters were going to go to the Catholic school in Mabee. So instead of me staying in the same grade with her, they moved me up another grade so that I went in, there was only one person in the eighth grade, so I moved from the sixth grade to the eighth grade. Well, in the eighth grade, I graduated from school in a graduation in London Township Church.
Hmm. What about where you go to high school?
Well, I came to high school in Dundee, Michigan. And I graduated from Dundee in 1940.
How many people were in your class with you?
There were 55 people in the class. I was number 7 of the 55, as I remember it. Arlene Sheets, I can't remember her last name now. She was the valedictorian. She went to grade school with me when I first started. She was in a grade ahead of me. But we graduated from high school in the same grade.
Well, when you were a child, what did you do for fun?
Well, there were a lot of things. I didn't have very many close neighbors. Had to go quite a ways, probably half a mile to get to the nearest neighbor. And our nearest neighbors were the Burks. And they had two kids. David was a couple years older than I, and Gloria was just a few months younger than I. Gloria's one that started school with me. And I'd go to their place and spend the day, or they'd come to my house and spend the day. I had lots and lots and lots of pets around all the time. I had one little puppy that arrived at our house, we don't know how. He just seemed to be there. So I brought him in the house. We housebroke him. We taught him a few things like sit down and roll over and things like that. And I liked to play cards when I was all alone because there wasn't anything else to do. So I taught the pup to sit up in the chair like dogs sit up to beg and to reach out and touch the cards with his paws. So we played cards that way. And, I did a lot of writing, reading, just ordinary things. I liked to garden. I liked to go out and plant things and watch them grow and stuff like that. And that's what I did when I grew up.
All right, Grandma. When did you see, drive, and own your first car?
Well, I guess I probably saw my first car going by on the road right outside of our house. At the time, the road was very close to the house. And then when they moved the road down further, you didn't have that much noise with the cars and stuff. But the very first car I think I ever rode in was an old Model T. And I can remember the noise that the horn made. I guess that impressed me the most. My father bought a car when I was about 3 years old. It was a car made in Toledo. I can't remember the right name for it now. It's no longer in around. I didn't learn to drive because they didn't have driver's training when I was in high school. So I didn't learn to drive until the summer I was out of high school before I could go in training because I was too young to be accepted in training at the time. They had age brackets. And so that year we had a hired man whose name was Albert Zutavern, and he had a little coupe, a blue coupe, and he taught me to drive his coupe. And so that's when I first learned to drive. And what was the rest of that question?
When did you own your first
car? I owned my first car not until I had finished training and had come home and gotten a job in Monroe, so I would say probably 1948.
Training, what are you talking about with that?
Hmm?
What are you talking about training? What was that?
Oh, that was nurses training in Philadelphia. It's Philadelphia General Hospital. And I had applied several different places. We had a friend here in Dundee whose name was Dr. Stanley Penzotti, and he thought I should go someplace away from home to get away from family because I was an only child. And so he talked us into applying at places like Chicago and Philadelphia and New York. And I happened to have a second cousin living in Philadelphia at the time. So when I was accepted at Philadelphia General Hospital, that's where I accepted. But I was only 17, and you had to be 18 in order to go into training, so I had to wait a year. The year that I waited, I worked harder than I'd ever worked in my life because my father couldn't find any hired hands around, so I drove tractor for cutting wheat and oats, and they, of course, had to be shocked and thrashed.
Do you remember Pearl Harbor?
Yes, I do. I was in training at the time. It was December the 7th, 1941. And I was at one of my roommate's houses for dinner that night. Her family had invited me to come for dinner because they knew that I didn't know very much about seafood. And they were having shrimp and oysters and everything you could think of, and so they invited me, and we were just sitting down to the table to eat when it came over the radio that Pearl Harbor had been attacked. Everybody got quite noisy and a little tearful, but it was kind of scary.
How did that incident affect you?
Well, in the first place, of course, the war itself affected us in many ways, because as soon as the war came, many things were you couldn't get. You couldn't buy gasoline, it was rationed. Sugar was rationed. Coffee was rationed. So at the hospital where I lived during my training, we had all kinds of different kinds of meals that we had never had before, because they couldn't serve the coffee and stuff. And some of the coffee that they served didn't taste like coffee. It also meant that we couldn't travel like we always had, because there wasn't enough gasoline, and the prices were so... And besides, the government wouldn't let the trains go like they used to. And there were no airplanes at that time like there is today. So travel was down, and I was kind of... in Philadelphia, and my family were all here in Michigan, but it worked out all right.
Grandma, do you remember when the radio came into existence?
Oh, I'm sure it came into existence long before I realized that it was even around, but I remember that we didn't have electricity, as I guess I forgot to tell you, we had an outhouse, I remember telling you, and I remember telling you no running water, but we didn't have any electricity either. And so there was no way that you could have had anything like a radio or anything, though I suppose that, or electric lights or anything of this sort. We first got them after the viaduct was built on the North Custer Road, and we got the electricity in our house. And the first radio that I remember hearing was one that my aunt and uncle and cousin brought, Elther, Leon, and Carl, brought to my grandmother and grandfather to listen to. But of course, the whole family listened to it. And it was very interesting. There were a lot of different kinds of programs on, and it was kind of flabbergasting.
How did that change your ways?
Well,
after?
It changed things because we could tell what was going on outside of our own little community, because we could hear it on the news broadcasts and stuff. It wasn't as broad as it is today, but it was certainly more than what it was before.
What about the TV coming into your life?
Well, TV came into my life after my first son was born. I had a hard time remembering, and then I remembered that he was just a baby, and our neighbors bought a TV, and they used to have us up there all the time to watch TV on Sunday nights. And as it was always Sunday night, and finally we bought a TV down on the farm, and that was our first TV. And as far as changing, well, it was amazing to see some of the things that were on TV. Some of the programs were certainly enlightening, but some of them were kind of, you didn't really know what they were all about because you hadn't heard about all these things that were happening. So it was kind of new, kind of different, but it absorbed the whole family. Everybody got into the television.
Cool. All right, Grandma, what can you tell me about Grandpa?
Grandfather was born in Sydney, Ohio. He lived in Sydney, Ohio. His mother died when he was 11 years old, and he lived there with his father. He graduated in 1940, the same year I did, from Sydney High School. After graduation, he came to Toledo to live with his sister and brother-in-law and to work for them. His brother-in-law had a go-around selling groceries in a truck anyway. And your grandfather went with him and did that. And then John bought the store in Grape, and the three of them moved into Grape. And that's when I met him. He was working in the store at Grape, and I used to go into the store quite frequently. We saw each other most of that summer that year, but we never dated or anything. And I went in training in August of 41, and he went into the service in September of 41. And he was stationed, first of all, in North Carolina, and he was stationed in several different places. He was a Marine, by the way. And he started writing me when he was in the service, and so I wrote back. I wrote to a lot of different servicemen because, you know, the old story was that's the only way they can stay in touch with the USA is to hear from us. So I wrote quite a few letters. And he was overseas from 19, and he was in the South Pacific. He was on Iwo Jima. He was on all the South Pacific islands, and he saw an awful lot of terrible things, but he never liked to dwell on them, never liked to talk a lot about them. And he came home in 1945. I had graduated from training, and I was still working at the hospital in the emergency room. And he decided he was going to stop over in Philadelphia and take me out to dinner before he came back to Michigan. He stopped over in Philadelphia, we went out to dinner, and then he informed me that he didn't have a hotel room, so he slept on my couch all night that night. He left the next day and came back to Michigan, and I didn't see him again until I came back home to Michigan to work. And then we started dating, and you want to know what our dates were like. They were real exciting. We'd go to a movie, and movies, of course, in those days were maybe 25 cents to a dollar. And they were good movies. You saw a lot of really good movies in that era, war movies and other movies. And then we'd go maybe to have a drink or two at one of the nightclubs and see a show at the nightclub because they had real vaudeville shows, very classy, very extravagant. And then we finally decided we were going to get married. We got married on the 10th of April, 1948. And I was working for Dr. Robert J. Williams at the time. He's an ear, nose, and throat specialist. And then in December of 1949, I was pregnant, and so I quit working. And I had your Uncle Bob in March of 1950. And then a couple years later, I had your father in October of 1952. We still, when Uncle Bob was born, we still lived down on the farm, and we didn't move into Dundee until, later on, and we lived in a house on Toledo Street that belonged to Al Zudevern. I'm sure you remember talking about him. Mm-hmm. And then we saw this house, and we bought this house, and we have lived here ever since. It's 50 years.